Welcome to Going Mental. This is your host, Eileen Kelly. I'm interested in the things many of us face but don't always talk about. After spending 5 months at McLean Hospital working on my mental health, I'm back. A little more insightful and with plenty of stories to share. Expanding on my usual topics of sexuality and intimacy, this season takes into account everything I learned during my stay. I'll be bringing together a wide range of guests, some beloved, some contentious, to discuss work, love, and the bizarre phenomenon that is modern life. Join me as we try to make sense of it all.
Hi, everyone. Today's episode is brought to you by Squarespace. It's a new year, which means a new and improved you. Let this be your reminder that in 2022, you can do anything. It's time to start that business you've always wanted, to start that blog, to start the podcast. Squarespace has everything you need to do just that and make a website to display your current work or your resume. You could create a wedding registry or website. I've been really obsessed with wedding talk recently. Whatever idea you have, they have the tools to make it a reality and help you claim a domain and make a website. So head to squarespace.com/goingmental for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code GOINGMENTAL to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. On today's episode, I'm joined by American actress and singer Bella Thorne. She's a former Disney Channel star who has been working since she was only 6 months old. To this day, she has appeared in more than 20 movies and boasts over 25 million followers. After an extremely image-managed childhood, she has grown up and branched out with a singing career, OnlyFans, even writing her own book. She has been the subject to a number of controversies over the course of her career, and today's episode will be a reminder that she is simply human.
I am Bella Thorne, and that is me. Yes, hello. Hello, friends, whoever's listening.
Can you describe what growing up in Florida was like?
Growing up in Florida was, it was okay. It was good. I mean, I started modeling when I was 6 weeks old, so I was just always working.
Working since you were straight out of the womb.
Yeah. And it was really weird for us when we came to LA because, you know, we used to like change on the beach in Miami for photo shoots. Like it would, I wore a bikini like every day for my whole life. And then, when we came here, we saw that that was just not the case. And then I remember I got in trouble on, when I was on Disney because I wore a bikini. That was just really crazy for us because we're literally from Miami. So we're like, what do you mean? It's a bikini. Naked. Like, so yeah, it's definitely, a culture change.
How did you get into working so young, or like were your parents performers? Because both your siblings act as well, right? Or like entertainment.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. My sister Kylie is a writer, and my sister Danny is a producer and a DJ, and my brother is a fighter. But we did all start in acting together. I'm also the youngest, so Danny was the first to start in modeling when she was little, and then Remy. And then when they were shooting Remy, my mom tells a story that my mom was still pregnant, and they were like, oh, when is it due? And she was like, oh, not for another, like, you know, month. And they're like, well, we have a baby shoot a month after that, so we definitely want to hire it. And she was like, you don't know if it's a boy or a girl yet. And they were like, oh, it doesn't matter, we just put different colors on it. And that was my first job, Pottery Barn babies
at six infant. Weeks old. Yeah. That is so wild to me. Do you feel like your father's death, because I know he passed away in a motorcycle mm-hmm. accident, right? Like mm-hmm. it was very sudden. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that had an impact on you starting to work so young from like a financial perspective?
Oh yeah. When my dad died, he didn't have life insurance. And my mom was taking care of us. And so now my mom's left with four kids, a house that was illegally signed in her name that ruined her credit. My dad did that. And then all his business partners took his money. And even the house got raided by people just stealing things out of the house in Florida. All my mom's jewelry, her clothes, their wedding album, things like this. And it was all stolen. And so my mom really had like the worst time in the sense that now she's left with four kids, doesn't have any money. We're in LA, we're trying to work. And, you know, there's so much pressure on her, on all of us. Like, you know, it just, him dying was.
How old were you?
Nine.
I was eight when my mom passed away. So, and so also, you know, in a sudden way.
How did she die?
She died from a brain aneurysm, actually.
Oh, my God.
I know.
So just in a click of a moment,
yeah,
she's gone.
It was like kind of like a seizure, and then that was it.
I'm so sorry.
Thanks, you too. Did you move to LA after he passed away?
No, we'd already moved to LA.
Okay, with your dad. So
no, without him.
Okay.
He stayed.
Walk me back. Sorry.
He stayed in Florida. He had a business there. We wanted to act. And so my mom took us up, and my dad would, he would come visit, and he was actually supposed to visit in the next 2 days before he died. He was supposed to come back up, and be like officially moving to LA, moving his business and whatever. I remember the morning we were supposed to go to the beach. And I like wake up because I just hear this like sound like a cow dying. And I like open my door and I see my mom, who's like on the other side of the house, and she's just like falls on the floor, and she's just like literally like an animal dying, like being stabbed to death. It was horrible to hear those noises. And she also didn't believe it, because when she'd woken up, her phone was off. So she got all the text messages from my dad that were like, good morning, blah, 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 I'll see you in 2 days. Mm. And so then she's like, no, it's not true. He just texted me. It was just a crazy, and we didn't have money to go down. So my mom went down alone for his cremation. Yeah. Which none of his family came to. Which was not nice.
Do you remember, like, do you remember that day? And
oh,
like,
yeah. Yeah, that day is, like,
ingrained in your mind.
I even remember the because my mom didn't believe it for so long, so then the police come to our door to tell us. And the whole day was just so crazy. And then the day that my mom got back, she showed us photos of my father on the slab, because we, you know, weren't there. And I don't think anyone knows how to handle that situation when someone
lost.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
like sudden loss.
Yeah,
too.
Sudden
it's
loss.
Not like,
it's like
it's
and not it's your husband.
Yeah,
like,
it's also not like kids. Obviously all loss is horrible, but mm-hmm. I feel like when someone has like cancer, for an example, like, and you have the time to kind of prepare to say goodbye, is very different than like a motorcycle accident.
Yeah. Which is also worse in a way, because it's like you have so much time to prepare. So every day you wake up thinking, are they going to die today? So it's like both of them are so fucking terrible.
I think it just goes to show also people just don't know how to like cope with
and say goodbye. Like no one can really say goodbye.
Do you have any advice for anyone who's listening that's kind of going through something similar? Maybe they just lost a loved one.
I don't have any advice, because there's nothing you can really say that's going to make that pain and that forever loneliness and that kind of hole that will be there forever in your heart. I read something in the book where it talks about time and how time is like this crane that's just like crushing you. And when that moment happens, you're crushed and you can't breathe. And then time allows this crane to just like minuscule, second by second, come off of you, and it gets better. It doesn't get easier. A lot of people say that death, like, oh, it does. It gets easier. It doesn't get easier. It just gets better. I don't even know that better is like the right term to describe it, but at any time of the day, I could be like, oh, I'm sure my dad would have liked these vodka cucumbers. And, you know, that moment comes up that might make me cry, or having coffee or something else. And yeah, just that sadness never goes away. So I don't really have any good advice for that.
Yeah. What's your relationship like with your mom?
My relationship with my mom right now is really great.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, we've made it past a lot of difficult times. And I think it took me a while to feel empathetic for someone. You know, we all hate our parents in a way. You know, there's always things, even if you have amazing parents who give you everything you can ask for, there's still something that's like, well, the way you raised me made me the way that I am. And the bad parts of me are also the bad parts of you. And that feeling can really make you not like your parents. And with my mom, it took me a long time to feel empathetic towards all the pain that she was in, because I was in so much pain.
Yeah.
And now I can really see that. And I'm also really thankful, because when I stopped talking to my mom when I turned 18 and talked to her for like 2.5 years, and every day she tried, every day she wrote me, it didn't matter if I didn't respond or the times that I did respond, and if I was really mean and just trying to hurt her the way that I was hurting, she just always tried and she kept doing it. And I'm friends with so many people that don't have great relationships with their parents. And the amount of people I know that their parents don't try, they try a few times and then they're like, okay, I'm done. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's just not something you can ever do with your child, because your child is forever. Like, there is no choice to stop trying in that way. And that's something that I'm always going to be really thankful for my mom for trying so hard through all her pain.
Do you feel like the loss of your dad really influenced you wanting to fix this relationship with your mom? Because I remember the last time we spoke, and we mm-hmm. spoke on the phone like years ago, and mm-hmm. I never put it out, mm-hmm. but we talked, and I think that's when you and your mom were in a really bad place mm-hmm. during that time. And mm-hmm. like, yeah, what led you to kind of want to reopen the door?
The thing that led me to reopening the door was one Christmas, and I looked at my sister, Danny, because we're in everything together. We're like, you know, half each other's souls. So I can't really make, we don't really make many decisions without each other. And I look at her and we're wrapping gifts. And I'm like, so what if mommy dies? And then we never like got over that.
Mm-hmm.
Danny's like, yeah. And I think that when you have someone die in your life, like, you know, everything becomes like, what if this happens? Because when people don't experience death, they think, they know that people die, but they don't think it'll ever happen to them in that way. And Danny's like, yeah. And I'm like, that would really suck if we like have kids and she's dead and we never got to like,
left things unsaid.
Yeah. So that was the Christmas that we decided to try to open up the door again. And, definitely one of the best decisions that I've ever made, for sure.
Have you been able to like air your grievances with her, or was it kind of like, let's just move forward and have this relationship?
Yeah, no, we both, yeah. We definitely gave her an earful. and, you know, she's going to therapy now. I just started going to therapy as well. Danny has just started a little bit. And yeah, I think that's all we can kind of do to make it better. Like, obviously there are still some things that I'm like,
that wasn't normal.
Yeah. But I don't want to be angry forever. And I think that being angry, is like killing yourself.
Oh yeah. It starts to affect
slowly,
you.
Just like
100%. Yeah, it's more of like poisoning yourself than
exactly.
It even hurts the other person. Uh-huh. Do you feel like you hold any resentment, or you did hold resentment for having to work so young?
It's a good question. I don't think so. I don't feel resentful of the way that I grew up in that sense, because it also made me extremely good at what I do now. It gave me everything that I have now, and it also gave me this workhorse mentality, which, you know, isn't always great when you are a little child and you want to do little child things. But in the older sense, I see a lot of my friends struggling to like
get it together,
get that work mentality, like really
work ethic,
you know? Yeah. And that's just kind of the easiest thing for me at this point. It's actually really difficult for me to
take a
stop.
Break.
Yeah. Which is needed, because if I don't take a break, I'm just filling my hole with more things that I think I want, and I want this and I want that, and I want to keep getting ahead, and it's just, it's like, life's just not worth any of that. Like, but it takes you a long time to kind of, you know, see that and say, okay, like, this isn't what life is actually about, even though it really feels like it is. That's like, you know, when people lose their job, they lose this, they lose their family, they feel like they have no purpose anymore. And it's like, but that's just not true. And maybe taking away all those things, you get to see what the purpose of life is, and it's to live.
Yeah.
And we don't live enough. We just go every day.
Well, also, I'm sure your identity is so wrapped up with working. If like, I think about like being a young girl, like when you're developing mm-hmm. who you are, if you're going mm-hmm. to work every day, like that's part of like who you think you are.
Uh-huh. And also an adult,
yeah.
which a lot of people were really like mean to me in the industry because I was so old at such a little age. Like, you know, you're like 9 years old, but you're speaking like an adult and you say very adult things and you hang out with adults and your whole life is adults, and it becomes very weird. Like, and people would get really weirded out with my mom and like, you know, like, why is she so old? She's so little. And like, she needs to be a kid more. And it just, you know, I don't know.
Like, do you feel like you missed out on your childhood?
I mean, I think there's definitely things that I probably missed out on, like...
Or do you just not even think about
school.
It?
Like, I never went to school. That's a big one that I wanted to do.
Did you just have a tutor and, like,
I was homeschooled. Okay. Yeah, so set school whenever you're on
I'm
set.
Like, I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, it's not the proper way to learn. But luckily on Shake It Up, I had an amazing teacher, Monique, who became like a second mom to me and made me love learning. And I remember when I was on Shake It Up, she put this math problem in front of me, and it's really simple, adding and subtracting. And I just start to cry because I'm so embarrassed knowing that like I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she never made me feel like dumb for not knowing. And she really took her time to really teach me, and give me the attention that I needed. And I think if I was in a real school, I wouldn't have ever got that attention. And I would have ended up completing school, but coming out not knowing anything.
Yeah.
And when I raise my kids, as far as educational system, like they very much need one-on-one real, I'm paying attention to you, mm-hmm. your feelings and how you're reacting right now, not a class full of 60 kids where I can barely concentrate on you and you might be having problems over there, but I've got no fucking idea because this one keeps writing rude things on the board and making the rest of the class laugh, like, and get distracted. Yeah.
I want to segue a little bit. I want to talk, if you're open to it, about when you decided to go public with your sexual abuse.
Mm.
And like, what made you decide to do that?
Maya Angelou has a really amazing quote that I don't want to say it wrong because it's amazing, so I'm not going to say it. It's a quote about having something inside you and you feel like you're a lie in a way. Like it becomes, God, she says it so much better. She was raped when she was 8. And it felt like I was a liar. Even though I wasn't, it felt like I was a lie because nobody knew
this big
this
secret
thing about me. Yeah. And it just felt like I'm just tired of not being me and being misunderstood and feeling like a liar and, you know, all these things that just started to like implode and make me feel like I couldn't breathe. And then it was just like, okay, you can say it. I also think as women, when you say that you've been raped or molested, we have this feeling that people are going to look at us like bruised fruit,
mm-hmm.
like fruit that's not as good as the nice ones without all the bruises. And it's not true, one. And I didn't want to feel like that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want anyone to feel like that as well. So it was like, okay, it's time because, you know, I'm not a bruised fruit. Yeah, which is also, you know, why I put so much stuff in the book, because it just felt like it needed to be said and it needed to be heard. And now all my fans, when people come up to me, instead of saying, I loved you from this project or this thing, which was always the case, now it's always, oh my God, the book. And then they always tell me this really fucked up story. And I'm listening to them tell me this and take down their walls because mine are.
Yeah.
And it's like this connection and beauty that you make with someone who's also in pain. It's so much different than any other connection. I guess that's why that saying misery loves company, because you definitely feel at home with people who have been in pain like you have, you know.
But I also think it's like courageous. It allowed you to have probably a deeper relationship with your fans, and then people to be like, oh wow, look at how much shit she's had to go through, and yet she still gets up in the morning and she goes to work. And so, you know, whatever I'm facing, it's like hopefulness, you know?
Which is also kind of goes back to that time thing. Some days you might wake up, and I don't use this term lightly, I mean it in every sense of the word, you really feel like you actually want to die. And that feeling, it goes away. It comes back, it goes away, it comes back, it goes away. And the more times it goes away, and the more times you're able to get up every day, even though you feel like you want to die, it's like the strength in being able to do that, because it is so hard to just do that, let alone have a life, like, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, the strength in that, I think for every person that's ever in pain, that is the best advice. And you just keep getting up every day. You do not get up. And then hopefully over time that strength builds and you're like, I've done this before. I can beat this now because I've been through this and I'm going to do it again. And life's also maybe just kind of like that. Maybe you're never fully happy for a very long period of time. Who knows?
Yeah. So you never went public with the name of the person, right? I don't think you did. What was the decision behind that?
I think one of the reasons why I didn't want to put out the name was probably because I didn't want to give people the real vision of what happened.
Okay.
Right? You've got this little girl and you've got this older man, and the things that happen are very gross. And you don't want people to picture it, which is also why I didn't go into detail about the things that actually happened.
Yeah.
Because once someone pictures that, they really can't
unsee it.
Exactly. And I don't want to force people to see the tragic things that I
had to endure.
Yeah. So I think that's probably a big reason.
Are you afraid that if they were to know those details or see that they wouldn't be able to see you other than that?
Well, I think it goes back to the Bruce Fruit thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. If you have this view of yourself, yeah.
Yes, and just to like have that picture. Like I have a picture of him in my head. I know exactly every inch of his fucking face. And I don't want everyone else to have that picture of mm-hmm. every inch of his fucking face. Like, I'm like, no, it's bad enough that I know it and my siblings know your face. I don't want anyone else to... You know?
Did it impact your relationship with your mom? Because I know this happened when you were really young.
Yeah, I think that a lot of things impact your relationship. Like, even the smallest stupid things, which when I have kids, like, I think about this all the time, having kids, which is very funny. Mm-hmm. And you're like, why? You're so young. And I think it's because it's one of the most important jobs that you can do in your whole life. It is the most important job in my heart. That is how I feel, because you're raising society, you're raising the next people that will leave their mark on the world, and hopefully it's a good one. And although a lot of bad things happened, I was raised to be a good person.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom never didn't let me be a good person, which is nice, because now the impact and the mark that I will leave on the world is helping people. So therefore, claps to my mom.
What steps have you taken to kind of recover? Do you see a therapist? Have you done steps to try to just forget about it?
Mm,
feel like it is also such a, it's fucked up, but it's such a common thing. Like I have several friends who were sexually molested as like kids. And like, it is really, really common, like much more common than people think. Just people don't talk about it. And I'm just wondering, yeah, if you took any steps and how you dealt with it, and anyone who's listening has maybe gone through a similar experience.
I think, again, I dealt with it with the only way that I knew how, which was getting back up every day. I did start therapy recently. It took me a long time. I had a very, I don't know why, I had a very scared and negative connotation around the therapy. Word therapy. Because there's definitely been some horror stories, and it is really about finding someone good. And my therapist now, she has this very motherly, protective thing about her. And it's one of the reasons that I chose her, because she really listens to me like a mom does.
Yeah.
And it's definitely helps. It definitely helps now. There's also certain tricks. She taught me this thing. We all have obsessive thoughts, and the obsessive thoughts can get worse. And if you keep letting the brain do this, it really becomes a mental habit that sooner or later you keep letting it go, and it just gets harder to get out of. So when you have an obsessive thought, and this thought comes back and it comes back, and you're like, I literally wish I could think about anything else right now besides this fucking thought. She says that you take something, usually neon, light colored.
Okay.
And it's an object, and you put it up, and you put it down, take it back, and you put it down. And she explains it much, much better than me. But there is something about the physical habit that you do this, where your brain starts to focus on that, and it lets go of this obsessive thought. And I've been trying that recently. It does work. It's kind of an odd thing, because you really don't think it does.
A lot of sense to me. That reminds me of just like behavioral therapy, like dialectical behavioral therapy is all about changing your behavior then affects changing your thought patterns. Mm-hmm. It's not just changing your thinking. It's like sometimes you literally physically have to do something.
So is behavioral therapy different than regular therapy? It's specific to the mind and the way that it
Dialectical behavioral therapy was created for DBT.
Like dialectical.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh shit.
They call it DBT, but it was created for people with personality disorders. So like people whose perceptions of the world tend to be skewed, and like there's really specific things that you'll do. So like if you're having a panic attack, they tell you to like literally put your face in ice water. And like it slows down your heart rate. So it literally will make you calm down if you're having a panic attack.
Wow.
Like all these really interesting things. And I was like, how come I never learn this in school? Like these are like useful tools. If you have a friend who's freaking out, if, I don't know, your friend just broke up with their boyfriend and they're having a panic attack, like really straightforward, strategic
things that actually work.
That actually work.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I want to go to
You should look into it, DBT.
That's funny to say that. It makes total sense, because I had a panic attack recently, and I hadn't had one in like, I don't even remember the last time before this time. And I got out of the car, and the ground was in Italy. It's cold ground. And I just like laid, like, I'm just like going through it. And I don't know what's happening, because I hadn't had one in so long. And my like body, I'm like, can't tell if I'm like having to throw up, but I like can't breathe. And it was panic attacks are fucked up. Like anyone that has them, I'm sorry for everyone. Like
people go to the hospital.
Thinking
they're going into cardiac arrest. Attack, literally they're having a heart attack, but they're just having panic attack.
Such a crazy feeling. And I get on the ground. That's like all my body can do. And I can feel how cold the ground is and my hands, like, and then I just keep getting further and further on the ground. And it's totally right. The cold thing really helps. Like it did calm me down. Like it took a minute.
Yeah. But it's called tip skills. And there are things like when you're in a high level of like emotion panic. And so you can either like raise your body temperature. If you just start working out, like, oh my God, I'm freaking out. I'm hysterically crying. If I just start doing jumping jacks, that also does something to like my heart rate so that you start to calm down. It's really, really, really cool. Honestly.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. And I'm like, I saw therapists for years who like never taught me any of this shit. And like, we would just talk about it. Like, okay, I'm feeling really depressed or suicidal, or I was, you know, cried myself to sleep. And I'm like, talking about it for months and months and months, like, isn't helping me actually like step in and change the behavior. Mm-hmm. Like I need to know in those moments, how can I stop feeling this way?
Yeah. Instead of getting deeper and deeper into the hole.
Yeah. And sometimes I feel like, especially if you're an obsessive, if you have an obsessive mind or like any OCD tendencies, like that can be really hard just talking about it on a loop. Rumination, you know? Do you feel like the experience that we just talked about, and then I'll move on, but like, has that impacted your sexuality as an adult?
Oh yeah.
In what ways?
I think in a lot more ways that I'm wanting to admit.
Yeah.
Even to myself.
Fair.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm sure it has. I just don't really have anything to compare it to in that way. It's like, do you know, the body is so odd. Like you would think that because of my experience that I don't like rough sex. Mm-hmm. It's the exact opposite. I don't like soft sex. So you would think that it would be more like, don't hold me down. But it isn't. So it's very hard to say like what comes from what, because
you're still figuring it out.
Yeah. And you just don't know, like, know, but definitely.
But also like if it's in a safe space, if it's with someone you like.
Oh, it could be with someone you trust. It's also.
Yeah. If it's someone you trust. Exactly. It's like a control thing.
That's I've
like,
never had a one night stand ever.
Really?
And it takes me a long time to get into bed with people. Like takes me like. We got to be dating like a month, you know, we got to be like really dating like every day, you know, like a month for me to even get like sexually attracted to a person. And for some people, like it can definitely kind of weird them out because they're like, yo, why don't you like want to get physical with me yet? And it's definitely a hard one too. Explain.
Do you explain like, hey, I've had these experiences, like, or do you just kind of like not even?
Yeah, answer? I definitely explain. I just don't know if the reaction is always what I'd like it to be.
Really?
You know, like some people immediately just bringing up the word abuse. Everyone's like, oh, whoa. I don't want to touch you. I don't want to make you feel uncomfortable. That's the last thing I want to do. And
Then it kind of impacts the sexual like, chemistry. Energy, right, chemistry. Right.
And then the other way is like, okay, we do it when you're ready. Like, which is great. None of them are that great though, right? It's always not a fun conversation.
I'm sure.
To have. So it definitely impacts it.
Well, I'm sure it's also, there's some level of just like, fuck. I just like, it's annoying that this has to keep coming back
so
up in
annoying.
My fucking life.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like, it's just annoying. Are you someone who has a lot of sex?
Yeah, definitely. When I'm in a relationship, I have a lot of sex. If I'm not in a relationship, then it's vibrator all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it's a way for you to relax because you work so much? Like it's like a way to
let go.
Let go. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And sometimes I feel frustrated, like, and I'm like, I should just masturbate because I'll probably feel better after. and when I go a while without orgasming, I definitely get a little cranky.
You're like, okay, I gotta go take my break. Sorry. Yeah. I'm like hangry, but I'm actually just sexually frustrated. Okay. So I would say your posts, your music videos, I watched or listen to your most recent song, the GCJ one. We were listening to it in the car the other day. But would you admit that they're like high, they're very sexual?
Oh,
sexualized.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I know
you're
like making out with a girl in that video.
Abella, she's my muse.
Are those your ideas? Like, have you ever felt kind of forced to sexualize yourself to like sell a song or sell a product or I don't know, just like, is it empowering? Is it not empowering? I think pick your brain here. No judgment.
It never feels weird when I'm the one who's come up with the decision.
Yes.
Right? It only feels weird when someone else is like, yeah, this is a great part to take off your top. And you're like, I'm sorry, what? You know, especially on set. I've been on set for a long time. And these conversations come up a lot. Probably more often than they should. Okay. And you know, I've realized as I've gotten older, I actually used to be more comfortable and more like, okay, but maybe I wasn't comfortable. Maybe I was just naive and I didn't know the impact that it would have later. And now as I'm growing up, and especially in the last 2 years, as far as the physical scenes, when it comes to those on set, the more you show, like, I don't know. Like it has become more and more uncomfortable for me.
Really?
And I'm not sure why, besides doing the math. And I'm like, okay, well, I was too easy letting them, getting into situations on set where I'm like, oh, okay, this is what they're asking for. This is what they want. Okay. And maybe I did that one too many times. And now that has like added up into time. And now it's like fucking hitting me like a rock. Like,
yeah.
By the way, or it's just the older I grew up, the more I understand my body and what the body means to you. And I don't know really what it is, but I've definitely become more uncomfortable. And I've been writing a show, as I told you, we're finally getting started. And, you know, when I've specifically written a lot of difficult scenes for my character to go through, because I also don't want to, you know, ask another actress to do this. I'd rather do it myself. And there's some scenes in there that aren't going to be fun to film. I will tell you that. But they're necessary. And I think I'll be totally fine because, again, I wrote them.
Yeah.
Like it's when you make the decision, you're comfortable with it.
Yeah. It's therapeutic when, almost.
Yeah.
Cause you're like, you're in charge of the narrative.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
How did you start your role on Disney? Like, do you remember your first audition?
Oh,
did,
yeah.
Were there self-tapes back then? I'm like, I don't know.
There's been self-tapes
I'm
for
like,
a long time.
I am
time.
Not an actress. I don't know like anything about that world.
yes. I remember everything about those auditions, and there were a lot of them. There were
okay.
a lot. There was like 10 mix and matches.
10 mix who?
10 mix and matches. 10 separate times that you go in to mix and match with people. 2 screen tests.
Oh, to
three
see if you have chemistry and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. For the CC and Rocky role. And I remember my mom used to always coach me because I did mostly drama. I was on Big Love, HBO before that. I was actually on HBO when I got that show. And yeah, I think people really tend to forget that. They see me as comedy and they're like, okay, Disney, here we go. And the rest of her career before that didn't even happen. And it did. It did happen, people. And my mom was like, I can't coach you for this because it wasn't going to work for comedy because my mom and I always did drama. So she asked my sister to coach me, who had tested actually on Wizards of Waverly Place
okay.
For the Selena role. And a few other times she tested for Disney. So my mom was like, Danny, you need to run those sides with her. And my sister dressed me. Remember exactly what I was wearing. And one of the reasons why they hired me was because I'd been in to read for Disney before, and I was always blonde because I'm naturally blonde. And on HBO, I had to replace a character, and she was a redhead. So I went in with red hair, and they were like, she is great as a redhead. She looks too bitchy as a blonde. And I thought that was pretty crazy.
How old were you?
Yeah, I was 12.
Do 12-year-olds look bitchy? Like,
yeah,
I don't know,
right?
Genuinely.
Like, but people typecast you from very little. Like, and that's kind of odd to think about the industry, is that because I had blonde hair and because I was pretty, they're like, she has to be the mean girl in high school. She's the bitchy blonde. Which is like,
do you remember
so
when you got that role? Was it like an aha moment of like, our life is about to change?
Yes, but like it... Money-wise, like, that was such a safe feeling, knowing that you had a show. And because we'd been struggling after my father died, that was definitely a good feeling. But I never watched Disney growing up. Like, I watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre when it came out, and The Grudge when it came out.
Okay.
I was very little. I've been watching horrors since, like, literally I can remember. And, you know, I remember thinking, like, okay, well, I guess I have to be funny now. And now I'm not going to be able to like cry on cue and do these things. And that was an odd feeling. It definitely felt like I was losing half of me because that's all I ever knew was drama.
Mm-hmm.
And now all I was ever going to know was
comedy
was
and dancing.
Laughing and dancing. And I didn't dance. I wasn't a dancer. So I had to learn. I had 2 left feet. It was really bad. Really bad. I was really bad. Yeah. And, but I also, Chris Thompson, the creator of that show, he really became like a father to me, and I really needed one then. And, he was on the first season and he got replaced, unfortunately. But he was just an amazing person, truly inside and out. Rest in peace, Chris Thompson. We love you.
Was that kind of the start of like you being recognized, was when you landed the Disney role?
Oh yeah. Yeah. But I'd been recognized before because in modeling, we did so much modeling. Like we were the face of Guess Kids, me and my brother.
Really? Do you have fucking, those old photos?
Yeah. We still have some of them. I have a modeling book. And like huge photos in Times Square and Children's Place, which was like a very big thing at the time.
I remember Children's, like, yeah. I remember like the malls.
Yeah. Those malls. So I would go whenever I would be at the mall, people would recognize me when I was little, because they'd be like, wait a minute.
You're the
I
girl
just saw
in
you in that poster. So yeah, but definitely, yeah, Shakedown's completely different as far as like noticing
the
me,
reach
like,
and stuff.
Yeah.
Can you kind of describe that to me, because you were so young, and like, is that different than how that's manifested now in your current life?
Like, in what way?
Just like being recognized and like being a celebrity, mm-hmm. or fame, or is it kind of feel like, oh wow, this is like all I've really ever known? Or do you really remember the distinct shift?
It does kind of feel like, I remember the shift. I definitely remember the first time that I was like, wow, this is really weird. And I was watching a movie at City Walk, and I kept hearing all this laughing behind me. And I like remember being kind of annoyed because I was just like, why do these people keep laughing during the movie? Yeah. And then they like left, and I'm like, okay, they left. Then they come back 10 minutes later and they have all this toilet paper, and they just put their arms through the seats, and they're like kind of coming on top of me into the side a little bit. I'm like looking up, looking to my sides, and I'm with my family, and they're also
like,
very confused.
Where is this
going?
They
have this toilet paper and they keep putting this toilet paper on me, and I'm like, I don't know, like, can you sign this? Can you sign this? And I'm just like, so confused, so much toilet paper on me. I was just like, oh, what? And they're doing it during the movie, so now everyone can kind of hear this thing. So now everyone starts looking, and then it more people came, because you know, anytime someone sees someone famous and they see someone else take a picture, they're like, oh,
they're like, now I want to get jump in line.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that was definitely, oh yeah, I remember that time. I was like, this is weird. And then one other time at City Walk, we used to love City Walk. It was very bad. There was too many people, and then City Walk didn't let me go to City Walk for a long time unless I went around the back. So I remember having to go around the back at such a young age, and now that's all I do. And now it feels like I never had an experience before going around the back, but I definitely did. And I remember those times.
Do you have boundaries like with
fans
and stuff that maybe you didn't
have? I've created
have when,
boundaries.
Yeah, I was going to say, oh, like, yeah. When you're younger and it's kind of just starting out, or you don't really know how to navigate it, like, what boundaries have you created? And
One I definitely created was, I used to kiss fans, especially because a lot of my fans would ask me to kiss them for a photo. Mostly on the cheek, sometimes on the lips. Yeah. And when it's a really cute gay girl, I'm just like, yeah, fuck yeah. And they're like, fucking came out because of you, bro. This is like, and they're like, can you please kiss me? And I'm like, how am I going to say no to that? Like, yes, I'm going to fucking kiss you. It's fine. And there was one time.
Oh no.
Where me and my friend, we're walking out of a movie, and this big group of teenage boys, and it's just me and my friend at the time, and we're like meeting my mom that's like literally about to pick us up. And these boys, they asked us for a photo. We're like, okay. They're taking the photo. In the middle of the photo, they're like, can you kiss me on the cheek? And me and my friend at the time, Pia, we're like, and it's just this very big group of boys, and it's just us. So just, you know, as a woman, the moment you feel pressured, just in any scenario where the tables are turned and physically you feel vulnerable, mm-hmm. this is one of those moments. And I do it, and he turns and literally just puts his tongue like all over my face. I remember when I got in the car, my mom's like, what happened to your makeup? And I was like, this guy. And to my friend, really bad too. And he holds her head when they take the photo, and he like is holding it there as he's like really like tonguing, like I literally am not kidding, tonguing the face, and he's holding her head, and she's actually quite smaller than me, and it was terrible. Like I will say, it was terrible. When she finally got out, and I get out because the other guy, but he didn't hold my face, like he didn't hold my head, like this guy really held her. It was terrible, and when we both get out, they just start laughing, and the boys just keep laughing and laughing, and then I'm like, my mom, I see her car, and I like just take Pia, and we just like get to the car very quickly. Boundaries created. Oh yeah. Boundaries were created then. That will never happen again. And other things that happen, like for instance, Ben, you know, the Italian fans, like he'll be performing and they will really grab his dick, fully grab his dick, literally, and like grab it hard. There's like videos. He's had multiple problems. I've definitely had people, fans, grab my ass and, you
so
know,
you
kind of like
go with security now if you know there's going to be like a big crowd.
I just don't go in the big crowds,
yeah, true.
Right? Like it's like, if you go with security, you're attracting more attention.
Okay.
Cause then it's like, who's that over there? It's more
with
just
the big
like,
burly dude.
Yeah. I have a big group that's always with me. We always all hang out, and I'm usually in the middle, and I purposely place myself in the middle because it's harder to see me when I'm crowded by my own group. And that definitely helps. And I'm down to take photos all the time. Like I'm like, fuck yeah, let's get it. It's just that some people do cross the line and then makes you feel uncomfortable
yeah,
for anyone
like,
else.
Hello, I'm a human.
Yeah. Like don't grab my dick while I'm on stage. Like this is insane.
Why do you think it's so difficult for Disney stars to kind of change career paths or almost like once you enter adulthood?
Right.
Do you feel like there was pressure from the executives and like actual Disney, or is more like the fandom and the culture of Disney?
Yeah, I don't think it's really Disney. I think it's the culture. It's the fandom. It's the way that people view Disney. And, you know, they view you as a little girl. And the minute you're not a little girl anymore, because people do grow up, people, like, can't get that out of their heads.
Yeah,
they, like,
yeah.
can't let go. It's like when you meet someone, they're like, I've known you since you were 3. Now you're this age. So crazy. And they can only see you as that 3-year-old in their mind, even though you're a fucking well-endowed woman now. I think people just can't let that go, and so the minute they see you just a little bit sexy, like what the hate that Miley got for nothing, like poor girl,
yeah,
like
yeah.
She's just fucking growing up, and me wearing a bathing suit, like, you know, almost ruining my career, like things that people just I don't even know. I don't even spend time
thinking about
this because it really is that annoying.
Yeah, yeah. What kind of impact do you think like the Disney has on youth and like society? Like, do you think there's something problematic about that image? Like, I'm thinking about like how they portray their actors, specifically young women.
I think that Disney does a pretty damn good job in portraying things. I remember when they learned that I was dyslexic, and then they were like, can we make the character dyslexic?
Oh, this so they would wrote be it amazing. Into the show.
And they wrote it into the show. They had me do the TTI. They loved that I had this thing that made me feel weak and vulnerable on the inside. And they put that out there. And some people could call that exploiting it. And other people could call that giving other people hope, like, you know,
raising awareness.
Like, it just depends on the way that you look at it, right? Because everything can kind of be looked at two ways.
Yeah. Do you feel like celebrities have a duty or like a responsibility to their fans, particularly in terms of like mental health or body image?
I think that as human beings, we all have responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
The way that you act with your friends, the things that you make fun of people in school for, the things that happen and you grow up and you're like, I don't want to be that person. You set an example. And in your life, you have to set an example with your kids, with your family, with your friends. We just have to do it in this, like, you know, everyone is looking. And so that example becomes, you know, very difficult to narrate because you could be some someone could feel like, oh, wow, that really touched me. And another person could feel completely offended. But I definitely think that we all have that responsibility. And then we put it on people that are in the media when we really should be putting it on ourselves every day. We have that responsibility to be better people, to talk about these things, to be open. And then we just get mad at people that are in the media the minute they don't do it. You know, it's like,
or they're not acting the way that we want them to. Do you ever have moments where you're like, I wish I could turn this off? Or like unplug for a little bit? Like, I wish I could. Or maybe you don't ever have that thought.
I don't know. Turn this off is such interesting wording.
I know, maybe that sounds like a little more depressing than I mean it. I think I mean like unplug.
No, I kind of like it. I kind of
okay,
like it.
Can I just turn this off
and be a different person right now?
Be a different person.
And
or
not have that responsibility and those things.
Yeah, go to Florida. No one knows who I am. Like, you know, I post a photo or I walk out my door and like I'm not being psychoanalyzed head to toe. It's not being written up in places.
Yeah,
like,
that's,
you know,
probably definitely the part I'd like
little,
to turn
like,
off.
Every little fucking thing that I do is like getting not ripped to shreds, but just, yeah, like psychoanalyzed by people who don't know you.
Uh-huh.
Like I think about, especially as you try to shift and figure out, you know, what kind of different realms you want to enter with your career. Like now you're doing music and I don't know, different things that you've entered over the past however many years. I'm sure like there is a lot of pushback. I see it sometimes when I check the Snapchat Daily Mail. Which is like, I check that when I wake up. It's like a guilty pleasure.
If you check those things when you wake up, your view of the world becomes very negative the minute you wake up.
I know it's probably a bad thing, but it's just, it's this weird guilty pleasure. I literally don't Snapchat anyone. I just like to check that like every morning. And yeah, some of them are like horrendous.
And the Daily Mail reports things wrong.
It's so false. No, it's so true. I can't believe I'm admitting this right now, but I'm just wondering if you ever wish like that could stop.
Psychoanalyze, definitely. That is not helpful for anyone unless you have a degree. Psychoanalyze me, please don't, motherfucker. That's definitely an annoying part. And that has made me feel bad for a long time because I used to struggle with terrible cystic acne and I did everything to try and get that better. I'm still working on my scars. I'm still, finding better ways to change my skin. And for a long time, literally just stepping out of the house and I wouldn't wear makeup because obviously makeup is going to make your acne worse. And every time that the headlines, oh, Bella Thorne's on drugs, look how bad her skin is. I was leaving the studio one night at like 4 a.m., which if you know music is very normal. And they papped me so hard on my skin. It's not a good photo. And the headlines, so terrible. And one of the headlines was Daily Mail, actually. And it talked about, like, it basically implied that I use heroin because I have this terrible of skin. And that's what
heroin skin looks like. What is the parallel between those two?
And the narrative became Bella's dirty. She doesn't shower. And that was fucked up because if you have cystic acne, if one more comment, like, go wash your face with soap, it hurt so terribly, but two was so annoying because it's like, do you think if I could wash my face with soap and get rid of this, that I would have fucking done that by now, you bitch? Like, it's definitely that part I would turn that off. Yeah.
Okay. Have you experienced cyberbullying?
Well, yeah.
Like a million times?
Yeah. Every day we wake up, we get cyberbullied. I'm sure you wake up, you get cyberbullied.
Do you ever have moments where you're like, has it made you feel really depressed or like you've cried about it or you're pretty good at just having a wall to it now?
Oh, yeah. No. I definitely have spent a lot of times crying. And a lot of times being very angry. And on the recent side, I've been more numb to it. You could say it's like, it comes and it goes and I'm like,
It's also removed. It's like on a screen. Like for me at this point, I'm like, it's literally some like loser in their basement who's like sending me this message on a screen. It's usually like off a fake account if I get a mean message where I'm like, this is so removed. I'm not even thinking this is like a real person sending this.
I think I feel really sad when I see it because it makes me think this is a person sending this who's so sad that this makes them feel better. Tearing someone down actually is making them feel better, and that's why they're doing it, because they're really so sad. And I'm a very empathetic person, and it makes me feel sad that that our community has so many issues, that people mentally have so much self-hatred and doubt and things that make them bad people. That makes me so sad. So I'm just like, damn, I never want to get there, and I never want to be so sad in myself that I start doing that to people and making them feel bad about themselves. Oh, Jesus Christ.
And so what do you say to someone who's like, well, the narrative of, well, you signed up for this. No one asked you to be successful or like boo-hoo, wah-wah-wah.
Yeah.
Like, people know who you are, and like, you live in a fancy house and you have a lot of money and you're very young and like, wah-wah-wah. What do you say to that?
I think in that way, I don't know. I guess there's two ways to feel about it. It's like, you know what? You're right. I could be anywhere in life right now, and I was able to buy this house. I was able to do this. And you're like, half of me is like, you know what? You're right. I should not cry about what you think about me, because I have my life. I think highly of myself. And why am I offended about what you think about me when I know my worth? I know how hard I've worked to get here. I know the things that I've sacrificed to buy this exact house. And it's half of me is like, you know what? I should think that. And the other half of me is like, well, fuck you. You know, everyone to each their pain. Yeah, I'm a human being. You can't just say that. Like, so yeah, I'm a Libra. There's always two sides of the scale, two ways to look at things.
What do you think some of the biggest misconceptions are about you? Or do you feel like how the public views you is inaccurate?
Oh, yeah. All the time. All the time. It really bugs the shit out of me.
Okay.
Like, the pre-misconception people feel when they meet me, I can see it. It's written all over their face. And I can immediately tell whether they're like, fuck yeah, Bella Thorne, like, you're dope. You're dope. And I can immediately also tell when they're like, oh, I've heard some things. And I can tell when they're like, oh, wow, I really don't care. I just like the name. I just like what the name brings. Like, I really don't care at all about you, your decisions, good, bad. I just like the fact that you're powerful. It's very interesting. And I really don't like the pre-misconceptions. It bugs me all the fucking time. One of the reasons why I put out the book is because I wanted people to know me better. I wanted them to see the inside of my brain and hopefully have a better understanding of who I am and why
your internal world.
Yeah. So yeah, that was definitely a reason for the book. And yeah, just that shit drives me crazy. Like, ugh, the amount of times that I just meet people, I'm like, you just think I'm like young and a party girl, and like, you just don't even know me at all, bro. Like, I just, yeah, I don't like it.
Do you feel like you deal with sexism in the industry? And I just feel like in recent years, specifically with like your image being more sexualized and putting out these songs and like you openly, I don't know, even like smoke weed, all of these things that did shift from when you were a Disney girl, obviously. And there's this paradox that comes to mind that like women in culture are told that like on one hand, our worth comes from like our appearance. But then at the same time, if you are sexualized or if you use that to your advantage, then like, you know, you're not taking it seriously or you're like a hoe. Uh-huh. And how do you walk that line? But also, do you feel like in recent years, have you ever missed out on any opportunities because of you finding yourself and putting out this more authentic version of you? Sorry, a lot of questions.
I can break it down. Which one do you want to start with?
Maybe start with sexualized in the industry.
This is a really tough subject because it's like, in general, if you're a woman, in anything you do in life, the sexism is going to come into play. Mm-hmm. That's going to happen. And every way you handle it could be skewed as wrong from other people's perspective, but every way that you handled it is right from yours. If you feel the decision that you're making is right with your body and how you're using it, then it is right. It is right because it is you. No one else can tell you what is right and wrong about your body and what you should do with it. And yes, definitely sexualize. Sexualized from being a little girl. Those things were weird. Like people seeing me in a bikini and knowing that I'm 12 and being like, yeah, this fucking girl's like trying to get ass. Like she wants dick. Like this is what, and you're like, you're talking about a 12-year-old, you fucking weirdo. Or I remember one time I was little. Okay. I must've been around 10. Okay. And a director in a callback said he felt like I was flirting with him.
At 10 years old, that's fucking insane.
Insane. And my mom looks at me and she's like hearing this from the agent of like why I'm not going further on this callback. She looks at me and she's like, and we're just looking at each other and she's like, well, obviously this person's a fucking creep. What are you talking about? No 10-year-old is ever hitting on you. Like you're just, I don't even know. And in that type of sexualized, like, you know, those things, very weird. The way that I sexualize myself, I love sexuality. I love body. I love skin. I love everything about it. And, I just love that shit. And I don't know that that will ever really change for me. And that's definitely why I am the way I am. Again, you also have to think that I've grown up changing on the beach since I was a little girl in bikinis. This is my life. Like,
do you feel like you were always very comfortable with it? It's just when you were in the Disney role, you couldn't show it? Or do you feel like after you left Disney, it was kind of like a fuck you to them?
Oh, no. It was definitely not being able to be myself. Okay. You know, we didn't know me wearing a bikini was so bad until we got a call from the head of Disney. Like we just didn't know.
And you almost lost your contract, right?
Yeah. And it was just so bad. Then it was like, oh no, well, now we can't wear a bikini and you know, you can't do this. And then when I got off of Disney, it was like, okay, so can I wear a bikini now that I'm not going to get fired again? And, you know, then people say like, oh, well, you have to remember when I got off Disney, I was like 15, almost 16. And when you hit 16, you know, everything changes. You start to become sexually attracted to people more. You start to be like you go through a lot of things changing. And people think that that's because of Disney. Like I am doing some sort of fuck you. And it's like, no, just do the math about the age. And you realize, oh, well, when she came off of Disney, then she was growing up. It's just that I was growing up in the public media. So everyone could see exactly what I look like, you know?
Okay. My last question. And then I know you got to run out of here. What do you want your fans and those who read your book? Like what's the biggest takeaway?
I think the biggest takeaway is to be honest. This book is honesty. If I can be honest with a million people fucking judging me and psychoanalyzing me every day and talk about things that are really so difficult, then you can too. You definitely fucking can. You can every single day. And it's the marathon. Like you never get to that end, right? But it's the run. It's the run that matters every time. And I'm giving you my honesty so that you can give me some back and give the people in your life some back. Hopefully that really inspires some honesty in your life.
Okay, well, everyone who's listening, the book is called The Life of a Wannabe Mogul. You can check it out and go get it. And thank you so much. It was great to see you.
Yeah.
And thank you for being, like, really vulnerable.
Thank you. Thank you for having a platform where you're so vulnerable.